www.thebeatles.com.
Hello and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend since the last time we were together on Friday morning. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to do my best to explain why these things are happening and what it means to you and your family. Then, during our second hour, our hope will be to engage God on His terms, through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and by way of His one and only covenant. This part of the program, if you're rational, if you're open, will be the best part of today's conversation. Our number, if you would like to engage in this discussion, question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say, is 877-300-7645. There's an item kind of tucked away in the news late last week that I'd be remiss for not discussing, or at least bringing to your attention. The European Union's Central Bank decided on Thursday to launch a new and unlimited bond buying program to lower struggling Eurozone countries' borrowing costs and to draw a line under the debt crisis. That's really funny. They're going to draw a line under the debt crisis. And to solve the debt crisis, what they're going to do is provide more debt. Sounds like the mumbo-jumbo of fiat money and what's happening with the Federal Reserve in the United States. To resolve the deficits that are being racked up by European countries, the resolution is to give the heroin addict more heroin. And now this program is unlimited. It is being conducted above the sovereignty of the individual nations. We are finding now evidence economically of a United States of Europe. Now, the European Central Bank said that it had agreed on a framework for buying the bonds of the troubled Eurozone countries on the open market in unlimited quantities. Yes, this is what's going to draw a line under the debt crisis. What the European community is going to do as a whole, the European Central Bank is going to do as a whole, is it's going to float bonds that are backed by the promises of countries that are bankrupt. You know, when in the United States, Michael Milken came up with the idea, the realization that government malfeasance, government intervention in the free enterprise system had made money too cheap and too easily available for individuals who wanted to buy homes, which is what caused this most recent recession, is government meddling in the free enterprise system to make home loans too large, too high a percentage of the property, too easily attainable by people who could not pay them back, too cheap in terms of adjustable rate mortgages. And when you do something like that, what you do is you make money more expensive for somebody else because the bankers have to be able to make more on the money that they're loaning out than they're paying on the money that is being deposited in their bank. And so when you artificially meddle and lower the cost on one side, you have a cost or a consequence on the other side, which made money too expensive and too hard to get for businesses. It's one of the reasons that manufacturing and economic growth have fallen so severely in our country. We have politicians that are ignorant of how economics works. So Michael Milken came up with the idea that he could provide money to corporations more efficiently, more effectively than banks could do as they were being regulated and orchestrated to create an entirely different paradigm, one that was counterproductive to industry. And the government was so hostile to what he did, they threw him in prison. The government was so hostile to what he did, they labeled what were actually outstanding investments and brilliant economic tools, extraordinarily effective, junk bonds. And now the governments, when it is them in control, They are literally creating junk bonds purposefully, deliberately, by issuing bonds on the debt of bankrupt countries. The hypocrisy of this whole thing, the idiocy of this, is stunningly amazing. Now, in America, don't gloat. Just because you don't get to read in the newspaper how a European central bank is creating junk bonds to underlie bankrupt countries, you have your very own Federal Reserve that has been doing it for years. America is bankrupt. We owe $16 trillion. You know, that old line that, oh, we don't have to worry about our debt, back at the time when it was a few $100 billion, we were told, you know, don't worry about it. It's a very small amount of money per capita, and after all, we owe it to ourselves. So don't worry about it. You ought not be concerned about that. That's what we were told. Well, now it's not a few $100 billion. It is $16 trillion. It is greater than the gross domestic product of the country. And we no longer owe it to ourselves. We owe it to the Chinese, who America has now decided is our new enemy. And we owe it to the Saudi Arabians, who America has now decided is our new ally. The inverse of those conclusions, of course, is true. Now, seeking to back up his pledge in July and to do whatever it takes to preserve the euro, the head of the European Central Bank said that he would address bond market distortions and, quote-unquote, unfounded fears of investors about the survival of the euro. You know, the dollar survives and the euro survives based strictly upon people's perceptions. We have the perception, we have been beguiled into believing that a dollar is an asset. But look at it. Pull out of your wallet a dollar bill. What you'll see, it's a promissory note. It's an instrument of debt. Who is the recipient of that debt? Of course, the Federal Reserve. The dollar has no backing. It is, well, that's not entirely true. At one time, the dollar was backed by something tangible. It used to be gold. Now the dollar is backed by a liability instead of an asset. When it was backed by gold, it was backed by an asset. It had intrinsic value. Now your dollar not only is a liability instrument, it is a debt instrument. It is backed by debt. Dollars are created by deficits. Every dollar that is printed is backed by a liability and not by an asset. And so the moment the people begin to realize that the whole thing is a charade, it falls apart. And so the purpose of all of this political smoke and mirrors is to keep people beguiled so they don't understand the nature of the conspiracy that is being perpetrated against them. Now, this is a quote by the European bankers. It says, under appropriate conditions, we will have fully effective backstops. So the term now is we have a backstop, fighting debt with debt, drugs with drugs, fire with fire. That which is a liability with more liabilities is not only a backstop, it is a line drawn under the crisis. To prevent potentially destructive scenarios, the EU banker said, this is a continuation of their quote, the ex ante, it's like they're playing a poker game, the ex ante, quantitative limits are set on the size of outright monetary transactions. Now, if that isn't economic mumbo-jumbo, all designed to beguile, you know, there's a lot of folks that are aware that there's problems with Paul's letters, and the one thing that everybody agrees with is that they're extraordinarily poorly written, and that the mumbo-jumble of his letters is some of the reason that Paul has been able to corrupt Yah's message and confuse people for so long, because, quite frankly, it is just verbal diarrhea. Well, that's what this guy just uttered. He said, using the formal term for ECB bond buying program, so the no ex ante quantitative limits are their new jingle of the day. Investors were on tenterhooks, the Reuters journalist said, waiting to hear how decisively the ECB would act to help bring down the borrowing costs of Spain and Italy. And that is all that is accomplished here. You see, one of the big fears of large debt, for example, in the United States, where you have $16 trillion in debt, that with that kind of debt, you have to inflate your currency. When you inflate your currency, you create inflation. When you create inflation, you have to raise interest rates. These are just automatic cause and effect of you run deficits, you have to inflate your monetary supply. When you inflate your monetary supply, you devalue your currency, and you require, you necessitate higher interest rates. Well, when the interest rates go up, which they will in the United States, and they will eventually here in Europe, to 7 and then 10%, at 10%, imagine, the United States deficit, which we're adding to at the tune of about $1.2 trillion a year with almost no interest, when that $16 trillion is charged 10% interest, we're going to more than double our annual increase of the debt. We'll be increasing the debt by $2 to $3 trillion a year. And at that rate, bankruptcy is on the very near horizon. So to create this postponement of higher interest rates and therefore the certain demise of the euro and of European countries like Spain, like Italy, like Greece, for example, like Northern Ireland, like Portugal, the EU is inflating the monetary supply, which will lead to larger interest rates, higher interest rates, and a more cataclysmic decline. But they're postponing it, and that's all they're doing, and ensuring that it is a greater calamity when it actually occurs. So that is what allegedly, according to this journalist, is what removes the investors from tenterhooks. Now, while the ECB president insisted that the central banks was not violating a prohibition on financing governments, it is effectively becoming the lender of last resort to nations as well as banks. And of course, as in the nature of bankers and politicians, the man lied. Mario Draghi is, in fact, in the business now and violating, therefore, the prohibition on financing governments. That's all this Bond Act was designed to achieve. I am Yada. This is Shattering Mist. We'll be back after the break. To Shattering Mists. I am your host, Yada. If you want to engage in this conversation, our number is 877-300-7645. Now, Scott and I were talking over the break about the condition that we find ourselves in. And it is very similar to if your house was burning down, somebody saying, I know the way to solve this problem. I'm going to go to the site, the house that is not currently engulfed in flames, and I'm going to torch it. You know, if a community is being flooded because a dike failed on one side of a in one levee, that's like going to the other side of the town and saying, you know, there's a levee over here. If I break that dike, then that'll resolve the problem. It is akin to saying that the best way to resolve a heroin addiction is to give the heroin addict vastly more heroin, an unlimited supply of heroin. Well, when you do that, death becomes certain. It becomes unavoidable. You can postpone the pain. You can postpone the death, destruction of the individual by giving them more heroin. But you assure that death now becomes certain, and it becomes vastly more painful than it would have been otherwise. Such is the case with the United States and with the European Union. Because 20 and 30 years ago, we as a nation decided to fight debt with more debt. We decided to resolve the problem we had of deficit budgets with more deficits and with debt. We find ourselves in a position not unlike the heroin addict. We're wallowing in an unlimited supply of drugs. it has become so bad that there is no longer resolution. It's the reason why now politicians who put their head in the sand, but throughout the other orifices belch out sweet-smelling platitudes, that they're elected. Because people want to hear the fairy tale. They don't want to hear the truth. The truth is that we're way too far gone to be saved. Even if politicians were to do the unthinkable, which is to completely remove all aspects of the Federal Reserve, to take us off of fiat money, to reduce the size of our military by 70, 80, 90%, to reduce the scope of Social Security and Medicare, both Ponzi schemes, by the same percentage. If they were to do the unthinkable, we still wouldn't recover. It's that far gone. That's how addicted Americans have become to the drugs. If you even speak in many communities of constraining the growth of Social Security and of Medicare, or of cutting back defense in other communities, you have a 0% chance of being elected. And these things don't need to be trimmed. They need to be cut to the bone. And even then, it's doubtful as to whether or not we could save the nation. That is what has become of us, and there isn't one person in 1,000 who realizes what has been done to them or understands the consequence. You know, we are now within very few years, some 14 years of entering the tribulation. And things are going to get a lot worse before they get much, much worse. But when that happens, I want you to know that you were forewarned. You were told that you had done these things to yourselves, and we have as a nation. We have brought these tragedies upon our own children. We have abused our children through our economic decisions, through our lack of personal morality. We have robbed them of their future. In a related story, Egypt's new president said that he would not impose new taxes or devalue the country's currency. Here now you have a Muslim Brotherhood president. Islam has gone from a secular country with a majority Muslim population to a Muslim country from a governance point of view, and it is already bankrupt. Of course, it is bankrupt because Islam destroys. And it has destroyed the tourism business. The tourism business, of course, was never based on anything that Muslims did there, but what happened there before Muslims conquered the place. And now no one wants to go to Egypt because it is way too dangerous. So Mohamed Mursi, this journalist from Reuters, says, has a window of opportunity to push through economic change while he still commands the political goodwill to do so. And yet he is unwilling to do anything because he knows that if he were to devalue the currency, if he were to raise taxes, if he were to be economically responsible, those who are not economically responsible would kick him out of office. They would do the same thing to him that they did to Mubarak. So what is the solution? You get the most bankrupt nation on earth to loan you money. That story after the break. We'll turn our attention to the Obama administration and their new deal with Egypt. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. You can call us at 877-300-7645. You know, there was a commercial, I think the first commercial in the break, that spoke of a cabal of international influences that was robbing America of their God-given right to the Constitution. And I don't know what was being sold during the commercial, and whatever it is, I'm sure it is a fine product, but I do want to address the premise of the commercial. Well, there are international influences that do have some effect on the demise of America, the the reduction in American prosperity, the reduction in American liberty. And America definitely has enemies. America's primary enemy is us. It is through our personal indulgence, our lack of morality, that we have not only bankrupted the country, but conducted economic pedophilia to abuse our children because of our desire to slather upon ourselves all manner of indulgences and pass the bill on to them. We have no one to blame but ourselves. In the moment that we begin to look outside and away from us for someone to blame, then we become no different than the Germans during Hitler's era, where he said, "Look out there, there's the boogeyman. They've done this to you." No, we have done this to ourselves. Our ignorance, our disassociation with Yahweh, our lack of morality, our lack of good judgment, our willingness to indulge ourselves and not take care of our children and not protect our children, to do the fundamental responsibility that we have in this life, to chase after all manner human institutions and rely on them, military institutions, national institutions, religious institutions, economic institutions, and to place our trust and reliance on them has led us to this place. We ought not look beyond. Also, there is no association of any kind between God and America. None. The Constitution is not a godly document. America wasn't a Christian nation. It was founded by a Jacobin and by a couple of Freemasons, which is the antithesis of Christianity. But beyond that, even if it were a Christian nation, that wouldn't be a godly nation, because God despises Christianity. God despises all religion. The first right in the Bill of Rights in terms of the free practice of religion would be directly opposed to what God wants. He wants us to walk away from religion, not to embrace it. So there is no correlation between God and the Constitution. God only gives us three rights. We have the right to mortal life. Tenuous, but mortal life. We have the right to free will. Now, it's not free will in terms of which religion we're going to choose, which political party we're going to vote for. Free will is the choice to either embrace Yahweh, come to know Him as He is, to accept the terms and conditions of His covenant, or to ignore them, or to reject them, or even to oppose them. That was the purpose of free will. And we were given a most special gift. That is a nesama, something that is unused in the vast preponderance of humans. That is a conscience, the ability to exercise good judgment. It is why the national religion of Europe and America, political correctness, socialist, secular humanism, and its replacement moral code, political correctness, makes being judgmental the most awful of crimes. As a matter of fact, there's a story that is related to this that we won't get to today, but I'll just share a moment of it with you. Even though there are considerable health benefits of circumcision, the European Union, because it is now guided by a national religion, as is America, of socialist secular humanism, the religion of the media, the religion of politics, the religion of academia, they have now outlawed circumcision. And they did so not because of any reason other than one. And that is that circumcision is the sign of the covenant. And socialist secular humanists exist in opposition to Yahweh and to His Torah. And that's why they did it. And so, folks, when someone tells you that America is a Christian nation, when they associate God with this country, if you have courage, if you have compassion, tell them they're wrong. You know, there was a bumper sticker I saw driving down the street the other day. You've probably seen 1,000 like it, so have I, which had "God Bless America" superimposed over a flag. The flag is one of those symbols that God says, do not venerate. And yet, we ignore His testimony and ask us to bless us anyway. That's like telling your father, you know, "Dad, I hate everything you stand for. I'm going to ignore or reject or throw in your face every instruction, every bit of guidance you have ever given me. But I want your money. That's what we do when we put God Bless America over a flag. I told you I was going to return to a story on correlating debt to Egypt. The Obama administration, the Reuters columnist says, is close to a deal with Egypt's new government for $1 billion in debt relief. Now, America is bankrupt. And what are we in the world are we doing giving $1 billion to the Muslim Brotherhood? The very source, the wellspring from which all the terrorist organizations that we claim to be fighting have sprung. Anyway, this is what a senior U.S. official said on Monday as Washington seeks to help Cairo shore up its ailing economy in the aftermath of its pro-democracy uprising. You know, if Americans would come to recognize that democracy is a bad thing, If you're not with me and you recognize that the Constitution is not a God-given document, but you go back to the Constitution, you realize it was opposed to democracy. The Founding Fathers spoke harshly about democracy. They knew, as do I, that democracy is mob rule and that it is the villain of humankind. It is the will of the majority imposed upon the minority. And so what happened in Egypt is an Islamic reformation. That was a very bad thing. The world went backwards. It didn't go forward. And that is why Egypt's economy is ailing, is because the country became more fundamentally Islamic. We ought not be encouraging that. The U.S. diplomats and negotiators for Egypt's new Islamist president, Mohamed Morsi, who took office in June after the country's first free elections, says that free elections are good. When the result of free elections is bad, the free elections aren't good. Look at Iraq. Yeah, we're so proud that we gave them free elections. Look at all the little fingers that were held up by tent-wearing women. Oh, boy, I voted. Swell. We replaced a secular government with one totally controlled by the Shiite mullahs in Tehran, giving Iraq to Iran. How is that good? In Tunisia, they replaced a secular government with an Islamic one. How is that good? In Egypt, they voted. They oust a secular dictator who was bad with an Islamic government who is far worse. We need to understand the consequence of things. We need to see the bigger picture. When, you know, some idiot dribble on radio would say, well, we did a wonderful thing in Iraq because we got rid of that terrible dictator, Saddam Hussein. Yeah, he was a bad guy. You know, there were on average two or three terrorist acts that killed two or three people a year when Saddam Hussein was in charge of the country. And at one time, he actually perpetrated a mini genocide on a small community of Kurds, which, by the way, the Turks are doing. And the Iranians do with reckless abandon virtually every day. And now that we have replaced him with a government that is controlled by the mullahs in Tehran, Iran is on the cusp of having a nuclear bomb that it would not have otherwise had. And now more people are killed daily by religious murderers in Iraq than were killed on average of 5 years during the time that the secular government was there. Sometimes you need to, in fact, all the time, you got to look at what you do in the context of the whole. And look at the consequence. Yeah, we replaced a secular dictator, but look what it cost us. 6,000 dead Americans, 60,000 mutilated Americans, $4 trillion squandered, and 900,000 Iraqis killed. Is that worth it? Well, if you think that's worth it, then your nasalma, your ability to exercise good judgment, is broken, probably beyond repair. Anyway, the continuing with this story, the progress on the aid package we call providing debt to those who are already indebted, creating more debt for them, aid, which had languished during Egypt's 18 months of political turmoil, appears to reflect a cautious easing of U.S. suspicions about mercy and a desire to show economic goodwill to help keep the longstanding U.S.-Egyptian partnership from deteriorating further. It can't have deteriorated further. The U.S. was a close ally of Egypt under the Eretic autocratic president, Hosni Mubarak, call him a dictator, that's what he was, and gives $1.3 billion already in military aid to Egypt, plus other assistance. Yes, we're going to earn lots of points with God by arming Israel's most ardent enemies, providing $1.3 billion of military hardware to Egypt, just like poking a finger in God's eye. Think of that next time you say, God bless America. Obama ultimately called for Mubarak to step down as he faced mass protests in 2011, but the U.S. president was criticized for taking too long to assert U.S. influence. Yeah, he stepped down. He was a jerk, no question about it. But what we have now is infinitely worse. A fundamentalist Islamic state in Egypt. The consequence of that is inevitable. Egypt is going to continue and more vehemently to blame Israel for all of their woes, and ultimately they're going to use American weapons to attack and attempt to destroy Israel. It's prophesized as the Magog War. Now we're going to return and conclude to this story after the break. I am Yatta. This is Shattering Myths. If you wish to comment on anything we've said this morning, please, we'd encourage you to call us 877-300-7645. Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yatta, 877-300-7645, should you wish to engage in this conversation. As we were concluding the story about the nation that is bankrupt, coming to the aid of the nation that is bankrupt, the nation that is the world's largest manufacturer of military equipment, continuing to send more military equipment now to a nation that is fundamentalist Islamic, a nation whose governance is controlled by the very organization that has conceived, given birth to, nurtured, and raised every Islamic terrorism organization on earth save one. The Muslim Brotherhood is the source of all Sunni terrorism organizations. It is the ultimate, well, it is the ultimate pipeline from Islam, fundamentalist Islam, the Quran and Hadith, to terror. And it, as the source of every meaningful Islamic terrorist organization save one, and the only one that it did not conceive was Hezbollah, because it is principally a Shia terrorist organization, the United States is not only continuing to send weapons to Egypt, but is also now providing loans to Egypt. So this story continues by saying Washington, along with the Islamists, shifted policy last year to open formal contacts with the Muslim Brotherhood, the group behind Mercy's Win. Yes, our Secretary of Hate, Hillary Rotten Clinton, has led that crusade, but her chief of staff is the daughter of one of the highest individuals in the Brotherhood. And so we should not be surprised by this. The Secretary of Hate of the United States, Ms. Rotten, has long supported and long engaged in communications with the Brotherhood. It puts America, of course, at great jeopardy to do this, because what we claim to be doing is fighting terrorism, and yet we're funding the very enemy we're fighting. It's not unlike Vietnam, where Americans were involved in supplying factories to build weapons in the Soviet Union, which were used to kill Americans in Vietnam, and yet we sent them there talking about how they were fighting for our freedom. And even in World War II, the Bush family was intimately involved in funding Hitler's rise to power and his ability to produce both steel and fuel for his conquest of the world. And yet we sent Americans in to kill the enemy that we ourselves had created. The same can be said with the United States funding of Egypt. Now, analysts say, because analysts are those who, like scholars, know many things and understand almost nothing, say that the United States could influence the direction of policy in Egypt, a nation at the heart of Washington's regional policy since the peace treaty was signed with Israel in 1979. And the best way to do this would be through economic support as Cairo tries to stave off the balance of payments and its budget crisis. How stupid could you be? We now have a fundamentalist Islamic government in Egypt, and we think that money that the United States provides and the weapons the United States provides are going to have more influence over that government than the Quran and Hadith. To think that, to squander American resources, to make Israel more vulnerable because of the weapons, is sheer ignorance. It's appalling that any analysts could think that when you have a nation now that has a theocratic government that is controlled by the most fundamentalist religious types within that country, that you're going to dissuade and discourage their adherence to the religion because you are willing to give them some weapons and some money. All you're doing is making a bad situation worse. Obama first pledged economic help for Cairo a year ago. Obstacles remained to completing the debt relief deal, which was reported to involve a mix of debt payment waivers and a complication of debt swaps, and it was not immediately clear when an agreement might be announced. But even as the negotiations proceed with Cairo and in Cairo, Washington has also signaled its backing for a $4.8 billion loan that Egypt is seeking from the International Monetary Fund and hopes to secure by the end of the year to bolster its stricken economy. Why was it stricken? Because it has become more Islamic. And so the solution is a few more billion dollars from the United States and another $5 billion for the IMF. More drugs for the drug addict. Is it any wonder the world is falling apart before our very eyes? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after the news and commercial breaks.
There's a guy named Dr. Wallach who is anything but your typical doctor, both a veterinarian and a naturopathic physician. Doc asks, why is this country spending more money on healthcare? By far,